Chapter 4. Puck and Daphne were already at the dining room table when Sabrina came down for breakfast. They had forks and knives in their hands and were pounding them on the table. "We want to eat! We want to eat!" they chanted. Elvis was barking along with the children's demands. Sabrina took a seat just as Granny Relda entered the room carrying several plates of food. She set them on the table and glanced at Sabrina.
"Liebling, you look like you were up all night," she said.
"Slept like a baby," Sabrina lied.
She knew she looked tired. When she had gone into the bathroom to brush her teeth before coming down, she saw that her eyes were bloodshot and there were dark circles underneath them. Her stubborn black marker mustache and goatee weren't helping her appearance either. Granny raised a suspicious eyebrow but said nothing, zipping back into the kitchen for more food. Soon, nearly every inch of table was covered with plates overflowing with flapjacks, toast, scrambled eggs, waffles, sausages, oatmeal, French toast, fruit, and yogurt. Best of all, it was normal food. Granny's odd culinary tastes often included black spaghetti, tofu waffles, daffodil gravy, porcupine stew, and cream of skunk cabbage soup.
"What's all this for?" Sabrina said, as she enjoyed the feast's delicious smell.
"We are celebrating your return from the hospital, of course," Granny said, as she served the girl a heaping spoonful of scrambled eggs, some sausages, a couple of pancakes, and a few slices of apple.
She took Sabrina's fork and knife and cut up the meal, so Sabrina could easily eat it with one hand. Then she poured maple syrup over all of it. Sabrina took a bite and was surprised to find that it was actually real maple syrup and not some exotic concoction the woman had discovered in Kathmandu or Timbuktu or one of the other zillion places she had visited. Daphne impaled a pancake on her fork and flipped it into the air. Elvis caught it and wolfed it down without chewing. Daphne took a pancake for herself and shoved the whole thing into her mouth. Sabrina wondered whether Elvis or her little sister had better table manners. Puck had no manners at all. He scooped up some eggs with his dirty hands and crammed them into his mouth. Granny smacked his hand with a serving spoon when he tried to do the same thing with the oatmeal.
"Well, so much for seconds," Sabrina grumbled.
"I was thinking that maybe after breakfast we could dig through the journals and look for clues about Red Riding Hood and the Jabberwocky," Daphne said with a mouthful of food. She winked at her sister.
Sabrina cringed. She hadn't told Granny that she'd discovered that the girl in the red cloak was Little Red Riding Hood. Daphne had just spilled the beans that the children had been doing research. Luckily, the old woman didn't seem to notice Daphne's slip.
"I have a very important announcement to make," Puck said, wiping his greasy mitts on the front of his green hoodie.
Granny raised her eyes in surprise.
"Well, don't keep us waiting."
Sabrina scowled. The old woman was intentionally avoiding talking about finding Henry and Veronica.
"As all of you know, I have been saving your lives a lot lately. It seems every time I turn around, you three are a breath away from the grave. Well, it's got to stop. I'm retiring."
"Retiring?" the old woman said.
"Yes, I'm out of the hero business. I'm not one of the good guys. I am a villain of the worst kind," the grim women said.
"We know, we know.
I thought all the do-gooding wouldn't be so bad if I could make some money, but I extended credit to people who could not pay," Puck said, scowling at Sabrina. "So, from now on, I'm going back to being one of the bad guys, full-time, which unfortunately means that since I'm not saving your lives anymore, you're all as good as dead. But a villain has to draw the line somewhere. Bad guys do not save people from the jaws of doom. Bad guys push people into them."
Granny Relda smiled.
"But you're so good at being a hero. Maybe you're supposed to be one and just don't want to admit it."
Puck shook his spoon at her.
"Don't even joke about that, old lady. I'm serious. I'm going to have to do an awful lot of bad stuff just to break even."
"Oh,
"So you did this when you were being a saint?" Sabrina said, pointing at the doodles on her face.
"I could have tattooed it, Captain," Puck said.
Sabrina threw down her fork and rose to her feet. "Come here and let me show you how bad I can be." Puck leaped up, spun around on his heels, and morphed into a parrot. He leaped onto Daphne's shoulder and shrieked, "Shiver me timbers! It's Captain Dutyface, scourge of the smelly seas!"
"Children!"
Granny cried as she stepped in the midst of them. Just then, a series of short honks, followed by a long, impatient blast, came from outside.
"Who's that?" Daphne asked.
"Oh, my, he's early. Children, let's hurry and get our coats on," Granny said.
Puck morphed back into a boy.
"Where are we going?"
"To the dedication for the new school.
Miss White invited us," Granny said.
"Everyone will be there."
"What new school?" Sabrina said.
Granny ignored her and hurried to the closet for the coats.
"But I'm not done eating," Daphne complained.
"Hurry, Lieblings," the old woman said.
Daphne grumbled to herself as she got up from the table. She peeked in the old woman's direction and, apparently, seeing she was out of view, snatched a handful of pancakes and wrapped them around some link sausages. She dipped them all into the syrup on her plate and shoved them into her pants pocket.
"That's going to smell fantastic later," Sabrina said as Granny returned to the room with the children's coats.
"It's better to be smelly than hungry," Daphne said matter-of-factly as she tried to put on her mittens with sticky fingers.
Puck crossed his arms in a huff.
"I just want to be clear. If a monster attacks while we're at this dedication, I am not going to help out. In fact, I might actually help drive the crowd into a frenzy. Are you sure you want me to go, old lady?"
"We'll take our chances," Granny Relda said.
Elvis trotted into the room. Seeing that everyone was leaving, he began to whine. Daphne rushed to the big dog and hugged him.
"Honey, baby, sweetheart, we wouldn't leave you,"
she assured the Great Dane, and gave him a big smooch on his lips. Elvis licked the girl's maple syrup-covered face and then went to work on stealing the pancakes from her pocket. Daphne squirmed away from the furry breakfast bandit.
"Hey, get your own, you traitor."
"Come here, boy,"
Granny said, and the big dog darted to her.
The old woman quickly dressed him in his Christmas vest and hat before he could get away.
Elvis dropped his head and sighed.
"Don't be a baby. It's cold out there."
"And what are we going to do about you?"
she said, cupping her hand under Sabrina's chin and eyeing her face closely.
"Honestly, Puck, this time you've gone too far."
"Really?" Puck cried. "That's the nicest thing anyone's said to me in a long time."
Granny took a bright orange toboggan hat, put it on Sabrina's head, and pulled down until it covered the writing on her forehead. Then she wrapped an itchy wool scarf around the girl's face, all the way up past her nose.
"Perfect," the old woman declared.
Once everyone was ready, the family stepped outside. A bright yellow taxicab with fuzzy dice hanging from the rearview mirror was parked in the driveway. Sitting in the front seat was an incredibly old man with a long white beard. His head was tilted back, and even from the porch, the girls could hear his loud, raspy snores. Granny stepped over to his window and tapped on it several times. When this had no effect, she knocked even harder, but still the man dozed away. Finally, Granny opened the front door and pushed down on the car's horn. The blast shocked the old man, and he jumped in his seat.
"Great Jehoshaphat!" he cried.
"Mr. Van Winkle, we're ready to go," Granny Relda said.
The tired old man rubbed the sleep out of his eyes and climbed out of the car. He wore a black bomber jacket and gray slacks. He looked like some of the cab drivers Sabrina had ridden with back home in New York City, except for the fact that he had a bristly white beard that hung down to his ankles.
"You didn't say anything about the dog," he grumbled.
"Mr. Van Winkle, this is Elvis. He's perfectly tame,"
Granny Relda insisted, ushering Elvis, Daphne, and Puck into the back of the cab, leaving the front seat for Sabrina.
"Has he got all his shots?"
the driver grumbled.
"Have you?"
Daphne asked, covering Elvis's ears with her hands so he wouldn't hear the driver's comments.
"Don't listen to the mean man."
"Fine, bring that mongrel, but if he wrecks my cab, you're going to have to pay for the damage,"
Mr. Van Winkle grumbled. Sabrina looked the car over as she walked around to the passenger side. It was a museum of horrible accidents. Scratches, dents, and duct-taped dings covered every inch of the cab. It reminded Sabrina of the kind of car that is slammed into walls to check for safety. When she looked inside, she half expected to see a crash test dummy in the passenger seat. There was nothing that Elvis could do to the four-wheeled death trap that the driver and Father Time hadn't done already. When they were all inside, Elvis's big head popped up over the front seat, and he sniffed the air wildly. The little old man had a greasy sack on the dashboard that smelled of hot peppers and mozzarella. Elvis rested his head on the driver's shoulder and eyed the bag hungrily, letting out a whimper.
"Not a chance, flea bag. That's my lunch,"
Mr. Van Winkle said, before he turned his attention to Sabrina. Her scarf had slipped down, revealing her mustache and goatee.
"I've never had a pirate in my cab before."
Puck laughed so hard he snorted. Sabrina frowned and covered her face with her hand.
"Where to?" the cabbie asked.
"We're going to the elementary school dedication by the river,"
Granny Relda said as she helped Daphne into her seatbelt.
"We'll be there in a flash,"
Mr. Van Winkle said. He put his keys into the ignition and turned the engine on. Then, nothing. For some time, Sabrina thought the old man was thinking about a good route to the school, or maybe waiting for traffic to pass so he could back out. But when 5 minutes had elapsed, Sabrina looked over to see what was wrong.
Granny? He's asleep again," she said.
Granny leaned forward and eyed the man.
"Give him a little poke in the arm."
Sabrina nudged his shoulder, but it didn't wake the old man.
"Try the horn," Granny Relda said.
Sabrina pushed down on the car horn, and the old man awoke with a start.
"For the love of all things good and holy," he cried.
"We're ready," Sabrina said.
He rubbed his eyes once more and then threw the car into reverse and pumped the gas.
They were off. "So you two are the famous Sabrina and Daphne Grimm, huh?" said the cabbie. "Heard a lot about ya. Word is you two killed the giant, took down Rumpelstiltskin, and went face to face with a Jabberwocky. Tough kids. Never heard of anyone walking away from one of those things, except maybe that knight. What was his name again? The one with the Vorpal Blade?"
"You've heard of the Vorpal Blade?"
Sabrina asked, remembering her research from the night before.
"Yep, that's the only thing that can kill a Jabberwocky, from what I hear," the driver said.
"Any idea where we could get one?"
The driver chuckled.
"It's not like they sell them at Walmart. No, there was only one Vorpal Blade, and from what I hear, it's lost."
Sabrina frowned.
"So you're an Ever After?" Daphne said.
"Sure, I'm Rip Van Winkle," the driver said. "You ever hear of me?"
Daphne squealed. Meeting the man behind the famous Washington Irving story was like meeting a movie star to the 7-year-old girl.
"I read about you in the orphanage library," she said. "You fell asleep for 100 years, and when you woke up, everything was different. How did it feel to sleep that long?"
There was no answer, and Sabrina glanced over to the driver. He had dozed off for a third time. Even worse, his foot was still pushing down on the accelerator, and the cab was picking up speed rapidly. Instinctively, Sabrina grabbed the wheel, though she had no idea how to drive a car.
"Help!"
she cried.
"He's out cold again!"
Granny reached forward and pushed hard on the horn, and the man nearly jumped out of his seat.
"Wowie kazowie!" he exclaimed.
giving the steering wheel a quick turn and sending the cab sailing into a parking lot. He braked just inches away from a dump truck. Everyone sat still and caught their breaths. As they calmed themselves, the dump truck started up and then pulled away. It had been obstructing their view, and when it was gone, they saw a shocking sight. They were at the old school that had been blown to smithereens by Rumpelstiltskin just days before, but it was completely gone. Every board and brick had been removed, and in its place was a brand new building. The roof was complete, but for a few shingles. The walls had been painted, and workers wearing bright orange hard hats hustled from one place to the next, nailing the last details into place.
"It's impossible," Sabrina said, as she opened her door and stepped out of the cab. "How could they have built a brand new school in such a short time?"
She knew the answer the second she spotted one of Mayor Charming's witches hoisting the American flag up a shiny new flagpole. Morgan Le Fay was one of the three, a group of witches that included Glinda, the Good Witch of the North, and Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus, the witch from the Hansel and Gretel story. They worked for the mayor and made most of his problems disappear overnight. The whole scene made Sabrina sick to her stomach. Mr. Canis was buried beneath the new school. He had died saving the children of Fairyport Landing, and this is how the town repaid him. If Sabrina could have, she would have ripped the new school down with her bare hands rather than have her grandmother see it.
"We should go," Sabrina said, as she turned to Granny Relda. She couldn't imagine how painful this must be for her grandmother. "This town is heartless."
"I'll be fine, Liebling," Granny said.
"Hello, Mrs. Grimm," Morgan Le Fay said, sashaying over to the group. She was a beautiful woman, and the construction workers ogled her every move. "Isn't it wonderful?"
"Yes, for a cemetery," Sabrina replied.
Morgan's smile disappeared.
"Well, I won't keep you. It's cold out here," she said, as she handed each of them a button with "Vote for Charming" printed on it in big purple letters.
Granny thanked the witch and turned back to the cab driver.
"I'd appreciate you waiting. They're going to leave Elvis here with you."
"No way, lady,"
Mr. Van Winkle said, as Elvis licked his face.
"This thing is a menace on four legs."
"But just imagine the tip you'll get if you stick around," Granny said.
The driver scowled, but nodded his head.
"Make it quick, will ya?"
Granny Relda led the children into the building, where they found a series of paper signs pointing in the direction of the dedication ceremony. The signs ended at two double doors. Granny pushed them open, and they stepped inside the school's new gymnasium. The sounds of celebration filled Sabrina's ears. Every ever-after she had met since arriving in Fairyport Landing, and a whole bunch she had never seen before, stood around talking. A round little robot man made entirely of copper stood nearby, talking to a skinny man made of sticks with an enormous pumpkin for a head. A black panther and a huge gray bear talked politics in a corner. There were also ogres, witches, fairy godmothers, an occasional cyclops, an enormous snail smoking a hookah pipe, and dozens of handsome princes and beautiful princesses gathered in small clusters. A beautiful cocoa-skinned woman in a green dress smiled and waved at Granny Relda.
"It's nice to see you, Briar Rose," Granny called out to her.
"Who's that?" Daphne asked.
"You know her better as Sleeping Beauty," the old woman said. Daphne opened her mouth, inserted her palm, and bit down.
"For the love of Pete, what are you doing here?" a voice said from behind them. Sabrina spun around and found a very small man in a black suit eyeing them disapprovingly. Mr. Seven, as he was known, was the mayor's assistant, limo driver, and personal whipping boy. He was also one of the seven dwarfs. He looked nervous, sweaty, and exhausted.
"Hello, Mr. Seven. Snow White invited us down to see the new school,"
Granny Relda said to the little man.
"Well, you've seen it. It's great, isn't it? Now, why don't you leave? The boss is going to blow his top if he finds you here. He's in a foul mood today,"
the little man said, looking around nervously.
"You mean worse than his normal foul mood?" Sabrina said.
Just then, a tall, broad-shouldered man in a purple suit swaggered into the gym. He was impossibly handsome, with dazzling blue eyes, a strong jaw, and perfectly combed black hair. His face was one big smile, and he shook hands with everyone he encountered. He came over and grabbed Sabrina's good hand without even looking at her. He shook it vigorously, then peered at her closely. He yanked the wool scarf from her face and groaned.
"Mr. Seven, what are the Grimms doing here?"
Mayor Charming demanded. The little man fumbled for words but had no answer. Mayor Charming was the hero of about a dozen fairy tales. Also known as Prince Charming, he had saved many a damsel in distress and married a good number of them, too. But somewhere along the way, he had stopped being charming and had turned into a first-class jerk. He was rude and condescending. And for almost 200 years, he had been in a bitter feud with Sabrina's family. He'd vowed to someday buy up the whole town and knock down the Grimm house. Still, there was more to him than just nasty hot air. Sabrina had to admit that the mayor came through in a pinch, once lending a hand to stop a giant from destroying the town, and then helping prevent Rumpelstiltskin from breaking through the magical barrier that kept the Ever-Afters trapped in Fairyport Landing. But Sabrina wasn't sure he hadn't done it all out of self-interest.
"Mr. Seven, I asked you a question. Who was the moron who invited the Grimms?"
Charming asked angrily.
"I invited them."
Charming spun around and saw Snow White enter the gymnasium. At one time, the mayor and the teacher were engaged to be married, but Snow White had left the prince at the altar, putting an end to their happily ever after. Sabrina couldn't blame her. Sure, Charming was beautiful to look at, but when he opened his mouth, ugh. Still, it was obvious to anyone that the two were still not over each other.
"When I said moron, I didn't mean you, of course," Charming stammered.
"I would hope not," Ms. White said.
"But why on earth would you invite them?" the mayor said. "This is a ceremony for the ever-after community only. Almost everyone here hates this family."
"Well, I don't, Billy," Ms. White replied.
The mayor's angry face immediately softened.
"Well, Charming stammered. "Of course they're welcome."
He bent over and whispered into Sabrina's ear.
"Take your grandmother and sister and find a rock to crawl under until this is over. And go wash your face, child. You look like the captain on the cereal box."
"Well, I suppose it's showtime," he said,
straightening up and forcing a smile to his face.
"Don't want to keep the public waiting."
"Good luck,"
the beautiful teacher said as she stood on tippy-toes and kissed the mayor on the cheek. Charming's face turned bright red, and he looked a little dizzy. He mumbled a few incoherent words and then walked away.
"You've got quite a power over him,"
Mr. Seven said to Snow White, who turned bright red and giggled.
"I wish we could have you around 24 hours a day."
She grinned.
"If you'll excuse me, I'm going to find a spot a little closer to the stage."
Granny winked, and Snow White disappeared into the crowd. Suddenly, two tubby men came through the double doors with Sheriff Hampstead, a Grimm family friend, in tow. The two men wore white shirts, blue jeans, and hard hats, and were carrying a set of blueprints with them. Sabrina recognized them as the sheriff's former deputies, Borman and Swinehart. The sheriff was doing his best to get their attention. To the casual observer, the three looked like normal, if a bit overweight, people. But Sabrina and her family knew their secret identities. Borman, Swinehart, and Hampstead were really the three little pigs in magical disguise.
"I can't believe you two won't even consider it," Hampstead complained.
"Listen, Ernest,"
Swinehart said, spinning around to face his former boss.
There's a reason why we didn't invite you to be a partner in our construction company. You're obsessed with straw. This new school is made entirely out of wood and brick.
I'm just saying that straw has come a long way, Hampstead said. It has all kinds of practical applications. It's the building material of the future.
I'd agree if we were building something that was supposed to blow away, Borman said. A kite, for instance, would be perfect. But we're building a school, and one that sits very close to a river, too. One thunderstorm with 20-mile-an-hour winds would knock a straw building over just like that.
The two rotund men walked away, leaving Hampstead to chase after them. Just then, Mayor Charming climbed onto the stage and stood at the podium. He tapped on the microphone and smiled widely.
Fine, citizens of Ferryport Landing. Welcome to a new era in our town's education.
I don't know why everyone is celebrating, Puck said loudly. Opening a new school should be cause for a national day of mourning.
The entire audience turned to look at the boy fairy. He grinned broadly and waved. The mayor, on the other hand, bit down on his lip and tried to control his anger before he continued.
I'd like to thank some of the community organizations that made this event possible. First, let's hear a round of applause for our co-sponsors and hosts of today's celebration, Fairy Godmothers Against Drunk Driving.
Several blue-haired ladies in fluffy dresses floated into the air, kept aloft by the little flapping wings on their backs. They all wore T-shirts with FGMADD on them. The crowd applauded as the fairies fluttered around the room.
I also want to thank the League of Wiccan Voters, the National Association for the Advancement of Handsome Princes, Big Brothers and Ugly Stepsisters of America, and Ever Afters for the Ethical Treatment of Talking Animals. Their hard work and dedication to this important project has been vital to its success.
The crowd applauded again.
When Ferryport Landing Elementary was destroyed 4 days ago, I came out to this site, and do you know what I heard?
There was a brief silence, and then a loud, squeaky fart. Sabrina turned and saw Puck fall over with laughter. For once, one of his childish pranks was well-timed. Ruined, charming, stupid little event, Sabrina secretly cheered. I'm starting to enjoy evil Puck.
I heard the future calling, Charming said angrily.
He regained his composure and started again.
And I saw an opportunity for our children. When I talk about our children, I don't mean the children of everyone in this town. I am talking about ever-after children. For far too long, there has been no room for them at the head of the class. This new school represents an end to that.
The crowd roared with approval.
I have personally overseen this project, supervising the work, even rolling up my sleeves and picking up a shovel to help out, Charming said, causing some in the audience to laugh good-naturedly. Borman and Swinehart Construction have done an amazing job.
It's Swinehart and Borman Construction, Swinehart shouted.
No, it's not. It's Borman and Swinehart Construction,
his partner argued.
Charming cleared his throat and the bickering ended. And we couldn't have done any of this without the generous donations of our town's three wealthiest families. Everyone, give a round of applause to Little Miss Muffet and the Spider. I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Harry Arachnid. Beauty and the Beast, and of course, the Frog Prince and his lovely princess.
The three couples stood off to the side, obviously fuming, but doing their best to hide it. They waved half-heartedly to the crowd. Sabrina was sure their generous donations were little more than bribes to keep them out of prison. It was only a few days ago that the Grimms had discovered that these wealthy donors had gotten rich selling their ever-after children to Rumpelstiltskin.
Some people ask me, Mayor Charming, what's the big deal? There are only a few ever-after children in this town. Why make all the fuss? Well, I'll tell you why I'm making a fuss. Because you people elected me to make a fuss.
He was again met with wild applause.
The new school will have separate, exclusive classes for Ever After children that will teach our heritage, traditions, and values. It will feature a cafeteria offering lunches that meet the special dietary needs of our unique offspring. And lastly, it will be named after one of our own. From this day forward, the children of Ferryport Landing, whether human or Ever After, will learn in a school named after the most famous Ever After of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, I proudly present to you Ferryport Landing's answer to the call of the future. Mr. Seven tugged on a large curtain behind the mayor. It fell to the floor, revealing a banner that read, William Charming Elementary. Below it was a huge bronze statue of the mayor, standing with his chest puffed out and a wide grin on his face. Several frightened-looking children crouched at his feet, gazing up at him as if he were their only hope for survival. The room was silent. Then the grumbling began. Only Mr. Seven clapped, and he did it desperately, as if he feared for his job. Suddenly, Sabrina was shoved from behind. A group of people was forcing its way through the crowd and up to the podium. A chubby woman wearing a long red dress and a golden crown climbed up on the stage and snatched the microphone out of the mayor's hand. Her face was covered in white powder, and a little black birthmark had been drawn on her right cheek. Beside her was a small army of men in colorful uniforms. When Sabrina examined them more closely, she was shocked to discover their bodies were actually playing cards. The Queen of Hearts had arrived.
"I don't see any cause to celebrate," the Queen said. "Having to rebuild this school is an unacceptable waste of taxpayer money, and you, Mayor Charming, are to blame."
Charming was startled, but quickly recovered and smiled widely at the irate woman.
"Mrs. Hart, we're not here to debate policy. We're here to dedicate this wonderful new school to the youth of this town."
Mr. Seven clapped again, alone.
"This school wouldn't have had to be rebuilt if it weren't for you," the Queen said as she turned to the crowd. "Ever Afters of Ferryport Landing, this sorry excuse for a mayor has let us down once again. In the last month, we've had a giant run amok and caused property damage that has yet to be repaired. Our police force has been reduced to one pig, and public services, utilities, and infrastructure have fallen to the wayside. 4 days ago, a perfectly good elementary school was blown to smithereens, and you are footing the bill. This man is completely incompetent."
"What's incompetent mean?" Daphne asked.
"It means he's not good at his job," Sabrina replied.
"Ferryport Landing has been in a bit of a budget crisis of late," the mayor said, looking defensive. "I have done the best I could with the resources at hand."
"Is that good enough for us?"
the Queen cried. Several people in the audience grumbled. A few even shouted,
"No!"
"No, it's not good enough," the Queen shouted. "But people, you don't even know the worst of it. Mayor Charming laid off 2/3 of the police force so he could deputize the Grimms."
A gasp went through the crowd.
"That's not exactly what happened," Charming said, smiling with gritted teeth.
"So, you didn't deputize the Grimms?"
"Well, yes, I did," the mayor said, as another gasp ran through the audience. "We were having an emergency. Rumpelstiltskin was going to..."
"He built tunnels. The Grimms have special talents." Charming was obviously rattled.
"So now the only people who can solve ever-after problems are humans? You heard it yourself, folks. Your elected leader thinks that we can't govern ourselves, that we need help from humans, and not just any humans."
The Queen raged.
"But the family that is responsible for our imprisonment!"
She turned and pointed an ugly finger right at Granny Relda and the girls.
"The Grimms!"
Sabrina gasped. Never had she had so much rage aimed at her and her family. She'd gotten used to knowing that most people in the town disliked them. But the Queen's anger was rabid, and worse, it was infecting the crowd. Everywhere she looked, furious eyes stared back at them.
Instinctively, Sabrina stepped forward, putting herself between the crowd and her family.
"Mrs. Hart, I won't have you stand up here and tell this crowd that I'm a fan of the Grimms," Charming said. "No one despises that family more than I do."
"Hey!" Daphne shouted. "We can hear you, you know."
The Queen continued to rant.
"Who knows how much influence Relda and her brood have over the mayor's office? Are they making our laws, too? I think it's time for a change. I think it's time for a new vision. We don't need a person who squanders the community's money and betrays its citizens by dealing with the Grimms. I, for one, have had enough."
The words were so hateful that Sabrina jumped back in shock. Even Granny was stunned by their ferocity.
"Today, I'm announcing my candidacy for mayor of Ferryport Landing," the Queen of Hearts declared. "And let me introduce to you the man who will become Ferryport Landing's new sheriff once I'm elected. He's a man of integrity, a man with centuries of experience, a man with a legitimate and respected career in law enforcement. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce you to Sheriff Nottingham."
A tall, broad-shouldered man with a handlebar mustache and long, curly black hair climbed to the stage. Despite a profound limp in his right leg, he was all aggression, from the deadly sneer on his lips to the long scar on his cheek to the clenched fists at his side. He looked at the crowd, unable at first to hide his disgust with all of them, and then forced an insincere smile to his face. Several people cheered.
"Maybe we should go," Granny Relda said to the girls.
"I agree," someone said. "Why are you even here? This celebration is for ever afters."
The family spun around and saw a large group of munchkins gathering nearby. Their leader's eyes flared with rage.
"I have as much right to be here as you do," Granny Relda replied tartly. "My family has been here as long as any ever after." "It's your fault we're trapped in this town,"
an enormous boa constrictor said as it slithered along the floor toward the Grimms. An old witch hobbled toward them, pointing her gnarly finger at the family.
"Charming has been giving you Grimms a free ride for far too long. The Queen is right. It's time for a change."
A small crowd of beasties, hobgoblins, and elves formed a tight circle around the family, cutting off their escape and any chance of help from friendly ever-afters.
"We've had enough," a crow as big as a dog squawked. "The only thing that has kept you safe until now is the big bad wolf. Now that your mongrel is dead and gone, what will you do?"
Daphne grabbed Puck's arm.
"Do something."
"Sorry, Marshmallow, I told you. I'm back to being sinister."
Sabrina grabbed her sister's arm.
"Leave him alone. He doesn't care about anyone but himself."
Daphne pulled away from Sabrina and faced Puck again.
"Well, if we get killed, you'll have no one to annoy all day long."
The boy cocked a curious eyebrow and nodded his head. His wings spread and he drew his sword.
"Back off, you filthy trash muncher," he said to the crow. "The Grimms are mine to torment. Take another step and you'll be wishing the wolf were still alive."
A cyclops stepped forward and cracked his knuckles.
"Boy, I will pound you into pudding."
"You dare mock me?"
Puck fumed as his arms morphed into those of a gorilla's. He pulled back and hit the cyclops right in the belly, sending him flying backward. The monster knocked ever-afters over like bowling pins.
"Who's next?" the boy crowed. "Who thinks they can take on the Trickster King?"
Just then a small, angry old man leaning on a cane nearby began to grow in size. His clothing ripped, exposing a sickening green skin underneath. His cane morphed into an ugly, blood-smeared club that was nearly as big as the cyclops Puck had just flattened. He was a troll, and the largest one Sabrina had ever seen. Worse, he was the angriest one she'd ever seen, too. Ever-afters scattered in all directions as he stepped through the crowd.
"Come here, meat," he growled.
You are about to suffer one of the worst beatings of your life, troll, Puck said without flinching.
Run while you can. The Prince of Fairy isn't some billy goat you can scare off your bridge.
Fairy, I'm going to rip you limb from limb and suck on your bones,
the troll roared. You don't know how many times I hear that in a day, Puck said. He swung his sword around and smacked the troll in the belly, with little effect. The monster looked more annoyed than hurt. With lightning-fast reflexes, the brute lunged forward and knocked Puck to the ground, then sat hunched over the boy, flashing his horrible, drool-dripping teeth. His neck muscles clenched as he prepared to feast on the boy. But suddenly, there was a popping sound, and Sabrina looked up to see a man materialize from thin air high above the gymnasium floor. He fell hard and fast, landing on top of the troll. The creature grunted with surprise, then bucked and kicked as he tried to remove his unwanted passenger, but the strange man held on. He reached into his overcoat and removed a small ring that he slipped onto his finger. He said a few unintelligible words, and a cloud of black smoke swirled around the monster's head, blinding him.
"That's just about enough, Howard," the stranger shouted at the troll. "Now calm down, or I'm going to get rough."
The troll stumbled around, unable to see. He inadvertently knocked over the statue of Charming, and it fell to the ground. Its head broke off and rolled across the floor.
"Turn your magic off, sorcerer!" the troll cried.
"Are you going to be a good boy?"
the stranger demanded. Howard the troll nodded.
"Yes!"
The man said a few more words in the odd language, and the cloud of smoke surrounding the brute's head vanished.
"Now go home and stay there until you've learned some manners," the man said to the hulking figure. "What would your wife think of your behavior?"
The troll lowered his eyes in shame, and along with several other ever-afters, exited the gymnasium. Daphne grabbed Sabrina's hand.
"That's the man from last night," she whispered.
Sabrina eyed the stranger closely. Her sister was right. The lunatic that had attacked them the night before had just saved their lives. Now he rushed over to the family and took Granny Relda into his arms. Sabrina watched dumbfounded as he gave the old woman a huge hug and a kiss on the cheek. "Are you okay, Mom?"
"Mom?"
Sabrina, Daphne, and Puck cried at the same time.
"I'm fine, Jacob," Granny replied.